and welcome. This is Wealth Talk. It's Friday, March the 5th. I'm John, and with me today is Simon and Alistair. Well, it's been a while since we've had a chat, isn't it? 2020 was the year of disruption. There was a lot of anxiety, a lot of fear. But here's the good news. There could be light at the end of the tunnel. 2021 could be the year of recovery. Right now, there is a big push to reopen the global economy. Vaccines are being rolled out. Here are some positive numbers. In Israel, 50% of the population have been vaccinated. And in the UK, it's 30%. And all around the world, other countries are playing catch-up. As I said, there's light at the end of the tunnel. We'll get there eventually. Now, what I want to talk about today is property and shares. What we have seen this past year is extraordinary. We've seen a big bounce in asset prices. The market has moved up sharply. The result? Well, valuations have become quite expensive. So, how do you get ahead in an overvalued market? What do you buy? How do you buy? And what exactly should you be looking at? Now, before we begin, a disclaimer. This is just a general discussion about investing. This is not personalized financial advice. Okay, Simon, I just want to start with you. It feels like we're living in a time where valuations have gone completely nuts. Here in New Zealand, we have seen house prices jump almost 20% in just 1 year. And if we look at what's happening overseas, what we're seeing is the Nasdaq, which is a stock index heavy on technology, jump almost 100%. So here's my big question. Is the market getting ahead of itself? Is it overheated? What are the signs that we need to be watching out for? What do you think, Simon?
Yeah, well, look, let me start with house prices in this country, at least. Obviously, that is a concern and a fear and worry for people because a roof over your head is really a necessity for us all. It is not so much that valuations are going nuts. It's just what people are prepared to pay. And this bull rush that we're seeing in house prices, we're not just seeing it in New Zealand, although it does seem to be worse here, but it's also being seen in Australia, the UK, and other developed markets post-COVID. Now, when any market is running hot like this, it usually comes down to, number one, a shortage of supply, and number two, much more availability of cash chasing that short supply. Now, the unbridled force that we see here in New Zealand is some of the lowest interest rates on record, brought about by monetary policy and quantitative easing. Now, that just operates like jet fuel. It's further enriched by the ability of most investors to deduct all of their mortgage interest against the rental income they receive. So not only do you have access to cheap money, but the tax department also supports that access. But personally, in this housing market, I would be taking very great care. For a start, we've seen investor LTVs, loan to values, increase to 40%. Now, this will restrict the fuel line a bit, but maybe not that much because most investors will be looking at their overall equity situation with those deposits, including their family homes. But anecdotally, what I am seeing is more supply ramping up, particularly with increasing density in Auckland, although that is disconcerting for some neighbourhoods to see, terrace homes and in some cases high rises going up where they weren't before. But we're also seeing announced government intention for more policy intervention in the market. And, you know, they may well seek to skewer investors in favour of first home buyers who they do want to support. So look, this whole housing market right at the moment is a cocktail that I would be very cautious of ordering. Now, as to stock indexes, we've seen some intense trading activity, particularly with tech, software and hyped up growth stocks. I'm not that sort of investor. For me, the stock market is just a venue to buy businesses. And I'm looking at all the usual quality and value measures in any company you analyze as if you were buying that company as a part owner. Now, in a higher market, I am seeing fewer opportunities due to higher prices you're having to pay to buy earnings and assets in some cases. But the market is not even, and there are still many really great businesses, assets, and opportunities that are sitting at value, especially those still recovering from coronavirus.
Those are excellent points, Simon. Now, we obviously do a lot of research. We also buy global stocks directly for our eligible and wholesale clients. We invest on their behalf. We buy assets that offer the best value for the long term in property, infrastructure, energy, banking, food production. What we are really looking for is a margin of safety. That's really important to us, a margin of safety. And I think this is a concept that a lot of people don't really consider. Why is margin of safety so important, Simon?
Oh, it's absolutely vital. There are risks in any investment and certainly in most things you do with life. As my wife always says to my kids, well, you can go outside, but just put some sunscreen on first. Now, the risk with any investment in a business is that business could ultimately fail. No business or company is perfect, or that company's trading conditions suffer to such a point that investors sell off the share and the price tanks. Now, with margin of safety, this is very important. You're asking yourself on every position you enter, what is the worst case scenario for this business? What is the worst that could happen? Now, I'll give you an example of how I approach this with a particular stock. So during the pandemic, I added Auckland International Airport here on the New Zealand Stock Exchange at around $4.70 per share, with full knowledge that earnings would be severely restricted for some time due to the pandemic. Now, I only did this because I could see some margin of safety. I could see that the book value of the underlying property assets was around about that price at which I was buying the airport. Now, I could also see with some confidence that eventually we will get to the other side of this pandemic and the airport business will grow again, will at least return to some semblance of what it was. And there was also an institutional capital raise, which helped with the liquidity of the business. So those factors there gave me, you know, some margin of safety that I was buying property assets ultimately at reasonable value. And in fact, what has happened is the airport has gone on today to over $7 a share. And in fact, investors now are seeing better recovery prospects for the airport and in fact are paying a premium on the margin of safety as they see that recovery potential.
Thank you, Simon. Very good insights. Now, if I may, I just want to give a real-world example of what we've been talking about in terms of margin of safety. Well, Lake Taupo is one of the great tourist attractions in New Zealand. It's the largest freshwater lake in the country. A wonderful place to visit. Absolutely stunning. Now, if I wanted to drive from Auckland to Taupo, it's about 3.5 hours drive. Getting to my destination safely means driving in an orderly fashion. It means obeying the speed limit. It's all quite boring. But let's just say I went nuts. I went crazy. I wanted to get there quicker. Get there in 2 hours. It's possible. It's within the realm of extreme possibility. But I would have to speed up a lot. I would have to drive quite recklessly, quite dangerously. And my chances of a horrifying crash along the way would be that much greater. Is it worth it? Well, I don't think so. Speed kills. It's a bad result. It's something we do not want. And I also want to add a bit of philosophy here. This is something that a friend in the military told me. And when he told me this, it absolutely blew my mind. Here's what he said. He said, slow is smooth and smooth is fast. I'll say that again. Slow is smooth and smooth is fast. It's so deep it blew my mind. But how true that is. And we apply that to our investment strategy as well. It's not a dash. It's not a sprint. It's a marathon. We want to be moving at a constant measured pace. We're in it for the long term. We want margin of safety. Okay, Alistair, just going to switch topics now. I want to talk about cryptocurrency. It is highly speculative. It is highly risky. But people still find it irresistible. At the moment, there are over 4,000 cryptocurrencies in the world. Most people will know about Bitcoin. It's the biggest cryptocurrency. It's been called digital gold. And there's also Ethereum. It's the second largest cryptocurrency. It's been called digital silver. But now guess what? There's also a new kid on the block. There's a new cryptocurrency. It's called Cardano. So what is Cardano? How does it work? Can you tell us a bit about this, Alistair?
Yes, John. There are many cryptocurrencies. Some of them are worthless and some of them aren't. You mentioned Cardano. This cryptocurrency has been around a little while. Me, myself, who was an earlier investor of Cardano, but giving it in the reference of the new kid on the block is a good reference for it, because it is now, in fact, the third biggest cryptocurrency in the world in terms of market capitalization. It has taken over very well-known cryptocurrencies like Litecoin, Bitcoin Cash, and Ripple. There's an interesting story about Cardano. Cardano's core business model is to provide smart contracts and to allow other applications to run on its platform, similar to Ethereum. But the interesting part is that, in fact, Cardano was actually founded by Charles Hoskinson, who was originally a co-founder of Ethereum. He allegedly had left over a dispute with another co-founder about keeping Ethereum a non-profit organization. Many of you will be well aware of Ethereum and know that this cryptocurrency has held its position at second place for a very long time. So the big question is, will Cardano overtake it? There are a few things to point out between the two, which is worth thinking about. Ethereum has the largest developer community of any cryptocurrency, even more than Bitcoin. Ethereum also has a greater number of users that use the platform, which means people will intend to go with what everyone is using, because that would give people the indication that it's a good, reliable platform. I often hear this term to go by, that go to a restaurant where there is the biggest queue. That implies for anything that it is good or good enough to some extent. Cardano releases their blockchains in stages. Having these pre-planned rollouts of their packages increases the likelihood of the network running with no issues. People have some fear with Ethereum, on the other hand. They fear that when there is an upgrade to the protocol, this could lead to compatibility issues. One significant feature that Cardano offers is what's called Marlow programming language. This gives someone the ability to create a smart contract-based application, even if they don't have any experience with development. This is a huge selling point to attract users to their platform. Me, myself, who is an experienced developer, this wouldn't be a concern. But how many times do you hear someone saying, I need a website, and all other questions in regarding to needing an IT person? Almost everyone. Wouldn't it be good if they could do the job themselves? I personally think so. But besides all these facts, to suggest why Cardano is a good platform, the main reason for the price surge in February 2021 and continuing to do so was due to the package that was going to be released, and it was officially released on March 1st, 2021. This package allowed users to create native tokens on the Cardano blockchain platform alongside Cardano's native cryptocurrency called ADA. So John, what the future holds for it, I don't know, but could look promising since it secured its spot at position 3.
Mm-hmm. Alistair, I'm just trying to consider the level of risk in cryptocurrency. I'm thinking back to December 2017, and I remember that quite well because that was the first time that Bitcoin exploded in popularity. It hit its peak, and then it crashed almost 80%. Now, obviously, since then, Bitcoin has surged again. It's gone on to reach record highs. But because cryptocurrency is so volatile and fluctuates so much, I actually tend to believe that they may not actually be currencies at all, at least not in the traditional sense of the word. In fact, I observed that they tend to behave more like speculative stocks or securities. I want to give a real-world example of this. So let's just say I'm going to leave my house right now. I want to buy something at my local supermarket. I want to do it with Bitcoin. So it takes me 10 minutes to get from my house to the supermarket. But in that 10 minutes, the price of my Bitcoin could shift quite dramatically. It could be worth a lot less. It could be worth a lot more. So with that in mind, doesn't that kind of weaken the argument that cryptocurrencies can be used as a daily medium of exchange? Isn't it better for me to hoard Bitcoin, accumulate it, not spend it? How do we deal with the level of risk here? What do you think, Alistair?
John, that's a very good point that you raised there. That's why a lot of cryptocurrencies could serve as a good alternative to Bitcoin. I think Bitcoin is just holding its place so well because it was the first ever cryptocurrency. And because of that, it has more age on every other cryptocurrency, meaning that there has been even more mainstream adoption before the other cryptocurrencies have had time to be recognized. Also, you mentioned the time frame of 10 minutes and how the value of Bitcoin could shift then is indeed one disadvantage with making payments via Bitcoin and some other cryptocurrencies. Also, to add to that, most people that accept Bitcoin as a payment option work on a 15-minute window, and in that time, the price could dramatically shift. There are other cryptocurrencies like Ripple that is used as a medium of exchange that can make transactions within about 1 second, which is faster than your regular FPOS or Visa card payment. This cryptocurrency has been adopted by some mainstream companies, but not as many as Bitcoin has so far. This cryptocurrency was mainly used for cross-border payments, but to answer your question, John, is it better to hoard your cryptocurrency and not spend it? It all depends. One thing about Bitcoin is this cryptocurrency is protected from things like inflation. These digital assets are usually considered a safe harbor during times of recession. So generally, it would be good to hoard them to some extent because when we make money, it becomes less valuable over time because of inflation. So owning some kind of asset which is protected from inflation wouldn't be such a bad idea.
Thank you for those insights, Alistair. That's very fascinating, very eye-opening. Now, dear listeners, of course, some of you are looking for investment help. If you qualify as an eligible or wholesale investor, yes, we can help you. Our Vistafolio Wealth Management Service might be a good fit for what you're looking for. Since 2014, we have delivered an annualized return of over 15% a year. Now, of course, past performance is no guarantee of future returns. But we do a lot of research on global stocks, and our mission is to pursue a lower risk strategy, investing in property, infrastructure, energy, banking, food production, which is what we've been talking about. So if this sounds like something you can't afford to miss out on, I really recommend that you take a closer look at Vistafolio. Go to our website, wealthmorning.com, and click on Vistafolio. And if you feel you urgently need to discover value growth and income, well, I encourage you to reach out to us. You can chat live with us, you can email us, you can give us a call. We will be there for you, I promise. Okay, Simon and Alistair, we are wrapping up now. Thank you so much for the great conversation. We'll catch up again next time. Thank you.
Thank you, John.
Thanks, John. Great to speak.